political movement, like mm-hmm. Alatorre and all of those guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, Artores. I mean, Comisión then became the women's group to support the men.
Like the women's arm of the men's movement.
Yeah, it was like, it was an arm to the men.
Right.
It wasn't that they were equal or they were autonomous from that. And they were beholden almost to those guys. And that's why the split took place, is because we were not. We were beholden to our ideals as women.
Right.
And
so who was in Comisión in the leadership in those days? Too?
Clara Molina, Yolanda Nava, Connie, I don't remember Connie's last
name. Francisca Flores was doing the
Francisca founded Comisión, one of the founders. Mm-hmm. But Francisca was my, she was a director. I was her assistant director. So we were both a Chicana at the same time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So partly she split off from Comisión mm-hmm. with Chicana. And then Chicana, she and I got really involved with making its own entity.
Right.
She had a big conflict with that mm-hmm. because she had created Comisión.
Right.
But I think with Anna, myself, and some of the other women, it became more of a feminist center. Women-driven issue center
right.
rather than political. Right. We were not interested at that time in running women for political office because mm-hmm. we thought that was a sellout
right.
and buying into the mainstream, and we didn't want any part of that.
Right. So what did the center do?
So
it
was initially doing employment and training for women.
Right.
And it continues to do that, we did it in non-traditional fields, like the apprenticeship, construction, anything that was non-traditional, we tried to get into that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was involved with the arts.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe a lot of the murals that are in the freeways, which are graffiti and all that, we were very involved with that, mm-hmm. in initiating that. And we got that from Mexico. We saw there's a lot of mosaic murals in Mexico in common areas.
Mm-hmm.
When
you guys went for the conference?
Yeah, we didn't see that existing here. And we instituted that. When we came back here, we started writing grants and getting money to do murals depicting women,
mm-hmm.
Latina women.
So do you remember which ones you all did or who worked on them?
Judy Baca was mm-hmm. very involved. And she would know, and Chicana Center has, I'm sure in the archives they have grants that we wrote, or,
mm-hmm.
but that was, we were very involved with that, and we were involved with learning conferences, or conference involving women, so we had a lot of conferences for Latinas in employment and leadership, and we just never really, at that point, never got involved with politics. So, I mean, and maybe too because it was counter the nonprofit objectives, because
mm-hmm.
it was a 501c3.
Mm-hmm.
I'm lying, because we ran Nel Soto for when East LA, they tried to incorporate East LA,
mm-hmm.
and they ran city council people, so we had a whole cadre of women who supported Nel Soto to run for city council.
Mm-hmm.
So we were involved with politics now that I think about it. But it was not through Chicana Center, it was,
right.
you know,
right.
apart from that.
Okay, so but the center was founded in 74, is that right?
It was incorporated in 74.
Right.
The center existed before then, it probably was around probably since 72.
Right, and then through there you all went to the UN Decade of Women in Mexico City?
Yeah.
How did you organize that and when and do?
Well, that's the other thing. We actually, Encuentro, no, what's it called? Was it Encuentro? No.
It had a newsletter, right?
It had a newsletter, but it also developed a chapter
uh-huh.
of Latinas under Comisión. We had our own chapter.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't Encuentro Feminine. Yeah, we split off from the main LA chapter. We were the East LA chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a name. But we organized apart from Chicana Center, but we were all part of Chicana Center, many of us. And a lot of us were Long Beach Day people. And we all went to Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an actual film on that whole thing. It was documented.
Wow.
It was a documentary that was supposed to be shown in Channel 4 or something. It was the main
station. Do you remember who made it or what's it called? Or?
I'm sure we could trace it. Anna and I were talking about that because...
Did she go to Mexico City?
Yeah.
She never talked about it.
Really? Uh-uh. Yeah, it was filmed. I think she did. Yeah, I'm sure she did. But...
So who from the Long Beach group went, do you remember? Or who was still active at that point?
The one who... you know, Francisca... I don't think Francisca went to that. Connie Pardo, who's a lawyer now, and I work with her in her firm, but her name was Connie Munoz and Bai Munoz. These were more like LA chapter people that became East LA chapter. Mm-hmm. And they were really like 10, 15 years older than us. Mm-hmm. They were involved with the civil rights movement.
Right.
So they were great teachers
right.
for us, great bridges.
Right.
It was fabulous. I mean, it was like, oh, you mean we didn't create this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, these kind of platforms or positions or problems. They had gone through them. So a lot of those women were there. We were very involved with the San Diego Mecha, the women's group there. Sonia Lopez was there.
The Center West or the group?
Well, we were involved with them when we were in Long Beach State, but then we continued to keep involved with them.
Right.
And they had all left the campus too, but they continued to believe in these issues
was
and promote.
Was it the San Diego group that was more Marxist oriented?
I think so,
uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think, Queta, Enriqueta Chavez, mm-hmm. who's still around, and Sonia, they went. Again, you know, we'd have to go to the source documents to verify who went and all of that. I don't remember, but we took about 30. We had a largest group of contingency.
Mm-hmm.
And
what happened at the conference? Do you remember what you remember?
We were very, we were not part of the mainstream conference. As you know, there was two levels, as there is today, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
And we met at various workshops and a lot of debate and a lot of splits. As women became more active and among our own, you know, women in general, there were a lot of divisions as to...
You didn't go with the... Just there wasn't a general U.S. contingency that... Or contingent?
I guess that's where part of the splits went. We went as a Latina or
mm-hmm.
Chicana. We all called ourselves Chicanas.
Mm-hmm.
We went as a Chicana contingency and that was part of the splits. Because Anglo had a different agenda than we did,
right.
Anglo women, and we tend to align more with the minority women, the African American and the Asian American women. But we did a lot of interacting internationally.
Mm-hmm.
We went. There was a gentleman who was a lawyer there, knew a lot of places, took us to like underground people. In Mexico, we got to meet with them and talk about our causes.
Mm-hmm.
So it was more of a mental thing than anything else. We did come out with slates. There are slates. Anywhere we went, there's slates.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? There were issues
right.
Recognized.
Right.
So it wasn't just dialoguing. We actually came out with documents. Who knows where those are?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there was, because we were the informal group under International Women's Year, there was a document that came out with our interests and our issues. So anywhere we went, there was always written documents as
right.
our priorities.
Right.
Where they are, I don't know.
Okay.
No, but we did actually, believed in a lot of documentation.
And that was really important. So you never had, never remember having issues or problems with the using the word feminist to describe what you all were doing?
Do we ever have problems with it?
Early on?
Never.
Right.
It was a natural. It was more natural than Chicana.
But would you always qualify like a Chicana feminist agenda?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And do you think that or even this early work with IJAS was feminist work?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because...
Other people have been struggling with that term. I see it that way, but I can't put that if people don't agree with it, you know?
Well, I still consider myself a feminist. I never had a problem with it. I think
even though it was like seen as whitewashed or Anglo inspired or
yeah
uh-huh.
I because we identified with those issues, they were real to us. Having an abortion was real to us.
Okay.
You know, not being heard was real to us. That was more real than going to the war. It was more real than running for political office. I mean, these were, it was too close to the heart. It was too close to us. And we identified more with that. It was more real in our daily living than the broader issues, even though those were very important to us as well. I never saw being involved with the feminist movement or being involved with IJAS or any of the women's movement as being anti-Chicano.
Right. It was part of the struggle.
It was all, yeah, part of the same struggle.
And, the work that you did all through the 70s and still now is for that, it's the same thing to you?
Right? Uh-huh, it's still the same. Because I don't know how a woman can be an effective change agent without having education, primarily, first of all, having the social consciousness, the political consciousness, and because we get pregnant, not men, having to be knowledgeable of one's body. All those are almost prerequisites to them being effective change agents in the broader picture. Because without having the knowledge, without having the voice, without having the freedom, I have to say, in terms of not getting pregnant, would we have any impact? Otherwise, we were, I guess, prisoners within ourselves, not addressing those issues. So I would say those are prerequisites to the broader picture, to the broader picture
for me.
The
larger liberation.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And do you remember how that came, I mean, how certain forms of consciousness emerged in that moment, you know, like the late 60s into the 70s? Like, because I always wonder the relationship of nationalism, like, was it always as strong, or do you remember what your relationship or what your critique or what your thinking was on it, or do you remember if it changed or got stronger or grew weaker? Or
I was very aware of it, the nationalistic movement.
Since you were a student at Long Beach, right?
Since I was a student in Long Beach, yes. It all happened at Long Beach, believe me.
That was your training ground, huh?
Exactly. Definitely reborn. Also born again. But it was very, very apparent. And as we went to different meetings, as I said, throughout the state and even across the United States, the nationalism that existed with Jorge Gonzalez's group in Colorado, to the Brown Berets in LA, it was very apparent. It was very repugnant to me then. And maybe not, well, because I was proud of being Mexican, I wasn't proud of that. But it was repugnant because I had a strong feeling toward human rights and women rights, and that crossed color lines.
Right.
And then it got so technical you had to be Mexican. I mean, that was repugnant to me. I mean, because it was more, hey, you share the same issue I do, you feel the same way, you're hurting like I do because of that issue, and so what if you're a different color than I am, or a different country than Mexico? Mm-hmm. So I saw it become weaker. I mean, I did. I'm one of those people that don't believe attacking something within our own. Mm-hmm. I just move away from that.
Right.
And it seemed to be a trend that the nationalism got weaker. Now, the Latino became a development point. Mm-hmm. I don't think, unfortunately, the cross-cultural or the multi-ethnic or the racial, multiracial, really took a strong hold that I would have hoped it would have, because that's where, to me, was more of the power.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that, where did that come from in that moment? Do you think it had to do with the notion of third world liberation or?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
And that's something that's in that moment, you know?
Oh, it was very much so. And as a result of that, I went to China in 76.
Right.
And so Mao was still alive, and we couldn't even go through the United States, we had to go through Canada.
Right.
But there's also documentary on this. You know, there's a lot of pictures taken and videos done. Not videos, they didn't exist
then.
And
Anna went to China also.
Yeah, but she went in a different group.
Right.
She went in a group after our group, but we went for the same reasons.
Right.
We went to see women in the struggle there.
So you were in a women's group. This wasn't a part of a Marxist group.
No, we're just, no.
Okay.
It was just part of an educational group, A lot of the women were Marxists, but we were more, it was the People's Friendship Association that brought together various people together, and we were more interested in how China struggled through the sexism and the racism and all of those isms, and we wanted to see it firsthand. And so we went more as part of this women's group that developed out of Chicana Center. It was part of all out of Chicana. They were all growths. And subsequent, there were several of us that went after that. And this Pat woman again, I can't remember her name, went as well. And
because I'm trying to think about how it seemed like there was kind of a lot of ideological diversity, you know, within certain women's groups. And a lot of people were affiliated with Marxism and some people weren't, but that seemed to be okay within women's groups. There wasn't kind of the ideological purity or the kind of ideological warfare that happened.
No, women seemed to be more accepting, more embracing of differences than the men. And I really believe a lot has to do with our upbringing socially as being egotists. I mean, it's like, you know, it's all or nothing, it's my way or no way. And we were more open to everything. And as a consequence, or as a positive outcome, we became involved with different philosophies. I mean, there wasn't one philosophy. Like, there wasn't the Chicano movement, so to speak. Now, there was a feminist philosophy that overlaid everything. But within that feminist philosophy was, again, a bringing in. We didn't reject men. We didn't burn our bras. We weren't that negative or repellent to the male species. I mean, we loved our men, we loved man. We just really felt we had to be heard and we had to be respected. And so there were men, like I said, that were became feminists with us that supported our causes. So it was more of an open dialogue of different philosophies, and like you said, there were Marxists, but there was a lot of socialists, and I know there were some communists, and I know there were a lot of us that were more open and liberal, more probably leaning more to socialist thinking.
Do you think that, or can you think about the relationship between certain forms of sexism within the Chicano movement and nationalism, because they always seem to be linked? Like when you talk about Corky Gonzalez, or, I mean, what do you think that that link was?
I don't understand your question.
Do you think that, like, sexism went hand in hand with nationalism, or what? How did that happen that those were always seemed to be closely associated ideas? Or were they?
I don't know if it's nationalism. I don't think I would identify it. I don't know, what do you call a society? Right. Just a society. I don't care if it's black, brown, or white, that did not see us as equal. So, what is that, imperialism? I mean, it's part of a general society. It's just as you go down into the layers, and in particular the Latino or Chicano movement, there. Somehow a thinking that when you put down someone else, then you're up. And unfortunately, Latino men, as black men, more so, have been put down so bad that if they put down their women, then somehow they were lifted. And so there's economics involved with it, and I think a misunderstanding or a misinterpretation of what power was. Because with women, we felt you put us together at the same level, at a high level, and you have double the power, double the impact. Somehow, our male counterparts felt, you know, you put us down, keep us in our place, there would be a strengthening then of a movement. I find that contradictory. They don't match. And that was a constant struggle, and still is today. Was worse then. I think it was worse then, or it was more overt. Now I think it's subtle. You know, it's covert. It's not.
Did you didn't go to the Denver Youth Liberation Conference or anything?
Yeah, I did.
You did.
I don't know if it was called that, but we went to a conference, Denver, a couple of times.
The
we were there.
That's I mean, it's seen in the historical literature as like the birth of the Chicano movement and all this stuff, you know? And that's the conference where...
But it came after, really.
Supposedly, that's the conference where the Women's Caucus met and somehow...
I was just going to say that. I was just going to say there was a Women's Caucus there. But, you know, there were so many caucuses. I mean, it's all... We were always a caucus, and we got sick of that. We didn't want to be a caucus.
Right. But supposedly, I mean, that's an infamous conference because that's where... somehow the spokesperson of the Women's Caucus came out and said it's the result that Chicanas don't want to be liberated. Do you remember that? It was in 1969.
I was there. But I remember the caucus, and I remember there was a split there, too. Right. There's never been a uniform voice. There's never been a unified voice among...
I think that the women from El Grito del Norte in Mexico wrote about it. And Betita Martinez and that woman, Enriqueta... I don't remember her last name.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
But you don't remember, and you don't remember what happened if you were at that caucus meeting.
No, I was there. Isn't it horrible? I do remember a split, a division, as usual, and probably an empowerment that took place there, really, for us.
Because some other women who were at that thought it was strange, like the women had talked about the need for women's liberation or some kind of women's emancipation platform within the movement. Mm-hmm. And then when this spokesperson got up to represent the caucus, that's when it came out that women didn't want to be liberated. And
so
there was some kind of weird thing.
Yeah.
But you don't remember the details?
No, not at all.
So then after, you worked at the Chicana Service Action Center for 4 years,
mm-hmm.
from 74 to 78?
Mm-hmm.
And what did you do? You were the assistant?
Yeah, I was the deputy director under Francisca Flores. So the only reason I left was because I wanted to go to law school. And there was so many dynamics going on. And Francisca didn't think it was possible to be a deputy director and go to law school. Because I was going to go at night, which I did.
Mm-hmm.
And really discouraged me, saying it was a waste of time. You know, lawyers were a waste of time. You know, you kind of look at the whole institution as, you know, against really doing anything progressive.
Right.
And it was just something I felt strongly coming back from China, that women were in all realms, and I felt there was there could be, you know, an impact made by becoming a lawyer, a woman's lawyer, so to speak. And I left Chicana because I went to law school.
Uh-huh.
And then I worked for El Proyecto.
Right.
During the day I went to law school at night.
Oh, so when did you go to where did you go to law school?
San Fernando School of Law.
Mm-hmm. And you got your degree?
Uh-huh, my Juris Doctor.
Uh-huh.
And took the bar several times. We won't say how many times. Because that's not something you ask people, and it's not, you know, something we feel proud about. But those of us who are not lawyers, you know, it's to us irrelevant except the pain that we went through in the struggle.
Right.
And it's almost like you relived the racism and sexism all over again in for many of us that are lawyers and judges, women judges, that fought so hard. We thought in the Mecha days we had to re-fight for our rights again.
Right.
And El Proyecto, I've been here since 78.
Wow.
And this has become more of a woman-run corporation and program-oriented corporation. People say because I'm a woman, you know, that's happening. I men don't want to work for me. And the programs, you know, they don't apply. And the programs that we do here are around really women and children.
Right. So then you've been practicing law since then?
I've been practicing law since 92. Mm-hmm. And I do family law.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very much involved with domestic violence and, of course, children and women again, mm-hmm. on an individual base,
right.
struggle, which is still very, very real, still as bad as it was, you know, then in Long Beach that I experienced now. And I see it in the courtrooms. You know, there's predominantly male attorneys and predominantly male judges. And the problem is Latinas don't apply for judgeships. There's not enough of us really practicing. And a lot of us just burned out, you know.
Right.
You go the extra mile, but you can't go the extra, extra that you used to.
Right. Well, it seemed like you all came from that first generation that really had a push, you know. Because I think it has been, it's not easy, but it's been a little bit easy. There's some sense of that's doable for younger generations. So.
Yeah. I think, you know, as you said, that was a training ground and a learning foundation was Long Beach State. And you see the difference, like those of us that were a part of the 70s
right.
and the student movement, in what we do now and how we do it versus others that were not.
Like what?
There's just a big empty hole with the other people. There's no heart in what they do. There's no consciousness in what they do. It's almost like, you know, it's more of an individual struggle. Rather than for most of us, we still see it as a community struggle, a broader struggle, a bigger battle. The depth in which you see people participating in decision making is very limited. I mean, it's almost like we do this because there's right and wrong
mm-hmm.
at this moment, versus those of us involved in the movement, we know it's so rooted.
Mm-hmm.
And we know it's only the tip of the iceberg,
mm-hmm.
But we've been involved almost like from a very radical to a more conservative or traditional involvement. You know, I think you would find the people for Long Beach State, very successful group of people. We're all in professions. We're all very well established.
Like who do you mean? Like, what do you mean?
Well, like the professor at Cal State. L.A., Fernando Hernandez,
mm-hmm.
Like Sal Alba, who's an attorney, well, Frank Sandoval, who died, but he was, you know, he became the head of the Chicano Studies. There's a gentleman, talking about men, I know too, but he was a special assistant to the supervisor, Ed Edelman. They're Long Beach. They were all involved with the student movement. Ruben Barlow, who died of a heart attack, but he was a psychologist at the state level. In terms of us as women, Anna, yes, you know what she does. You know what Martha does, and the other one. Like Enriqueta Chavez is a counselor at the college. Sonia Lopez is also a college professor. We did not become just mothers of children, and I'm not demeaning that because I hold that in the highest regard. I do. I really do. I think it's a miraculous thing. But. All these women, all the people that went through the movement, hold very responsible positions and take them very seriously. Rochelle Torre was one of them too. Gloria Molina was one of them too. Even though we had different philosophical bases, I don't know a lot of people that are just disappeared in the woodwork.
Right.
I find them later on, like now being in the profession of law, and they're lawyers or they're holding high posts. So very few just disappeared and are nothing.
Right.
They're just not, or not out there protesting anymore, or we're not, you know.
So, after, by 78 you were here already.
Yeah, part-time. I didn't work full time here until 82.
And you went to the other Houston conference, the women's conference in Houston?
When was that one?
I think it was 76. 78? It wasn't the Chicana conference in 71, it was like an all-women's conference.
I think I did. Is that one before Mexico City one?
Could be.
Because we went to Texas before we went to Mexico City. I don't remember what happened there.
Okay.
I do have mainly documents I've kept.
Okay.
And maybe you want to see them next time we meet. And you, if you already have them, then you don't want, you know, want them. But
it would probably be good.
It would refresh my memory, like you said.
It would. I mean, it's just, it's good to, like, kind of, I mean, we went through a lot today, and if I can go back at the tape and pick up stuff and think about that. Do you work on curriculum development and education? Didn't you co-author some stuff with Anna? And
yeah, we were really involved.